Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Getting the hand jitters from cannibalism. That's the lesson. Tom
the one problem, there is, you know, a lot of good scientific reasons not to eat people, as well as the ethical and moral ones, but, I mean, when you think about it, the beauty of eating other things is whatever's bad in them generally won't harm you. You'll just pass it through because it's not... Because, like a disease, for instance, it's not, you can't catch it. Whereas you eat people, God only knows what you're infecting yourself with.
Mm. That's a good point.
And, so everybody out there, don't eat your neighbors.
Don't eat your neighbors.
You don't know what they've been eating anyway.
Power of the words, what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about
words are powerful.
Talking about the Book of Eli, Denzel Washington, Gary Oldman, back to his old classic baddie style.
Mila Kunis.
Jennifer Beals. From a Flashdance.
Flashback there.
Flashdance flashback. Tom Waits.
Malcolm McDowell.
And you got your post-apocalyptic film, Hughes Brothers directed, the guys that did the Dead Presidents movie, they did From Hell, and they've done a few other little things here and there. They worked with Atticus Ross to do the sound. I liked the soundtrack. It kind of had kind of a...
With his wife and brother.
His wife and brother. It had kind of an industrial-ish, but still it was like a movie score.
I enjoyed the score.
Yeah.
I thought it worked.
I thought it worked, too. Desaturated look... The visual effects were kind of on the low end of the high end for the most part, except the rowing to Alcatraz at the end looked terrible. It looked like really like bad blue screen or something. It just didn't work. It didn't seem real. It totally took me out of the movie.
I like the way they didn't explain the history very well, but you'd get glimpses. Like, I don't know if you noticed that crater.
Yeah, I noticed some craters. Yeah, the stuff had gone on. They mentioned that there was a war. You saw a poster at one point that said 2045.
2024.
So it was like this all happened after this war, and it was a war based on religion, as people said. And then there was book burnings, and it was almost like the post-apocalypse was second to. Or the apocalypse was second to the war. It was like the war happened and everything was bad, and
that's kind of how it was explained in Mad Max also.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, which makes more sense. I mean, it's a little more real than just like, boom, they drop bombs and then toe cutters are driving around raping people. It's like there would be a weird transitional period where naive remaining politicians would try to rally around and give stupid speeches.
No, they'd all be in holes.
Yeah, but after they came out of the holes, like they mentioned, they even mentioned that part in this movie. They mentioned that people kind of were underground for a year and then they came out and started exploring things. And
I'm wondering about that. I honestly don't know enough about
how long you need to
about,
be.
Yeah, the nuclear holocaust. And like you said, how long you'd need. But essentially, you could pretty much figure the world's toast. And the nuclear winter that would follow, things would be toast for a long fucking time. It'd be a dead planet, essentially, except for cockroaches and people living underground or whatever. But it'd go beyond that. I mean, the world would be so poisoned that it would be... I mean, the world's already gone through so many transformations, or Earth has gone through so many transformations in what just the overall chemical makeup on the surface, when you think about the different phases it's had and how much that can change just by climate, for instance, you know, like the makeup of the atmosphere and so really I would be really curious what would happen.
Gotta write your shit down, man.
Write your shit down in the middle of the night, wake up, and
yep.
It's gibberish.
Yeah. pick up any gibberish. At least then you'll have a chance to attempt to decipher it. Who knows?
But like I said, this movie was making me think, and just about every, you know, just the simple things that are nice to be reminded about trying not to take for granted.
Yeah.
The things that that make our lives comfortable.
For sure. The simple things, the nice things, the pleasant simple things, the complex things.
Right, and the thing that always worries me about that, again, like I was saying, is it always... I'm almost grasping at trying to understand how complex our societies have become, especially globalization.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how much... Oh, well, this is kind of going along with what we were talking about, and we were going to talk about it, that show on the History Channel about if there was a major apocalypse,
yeah,
whatever it might be.
Oh, after people, 100 years after people, that kind of
stuff. Well, that's more just talking about, you know, whether or not Twinkies will be around.
Yeah. That is an interesting
but
show.
But they had this show, I think it was because of all the 2012 shit.
Uh-huh.
Or I think the swine flu brought it up too.
So if there was some global pandemic of some kind,
global
what
pandemic,
would happen, yeah.
What would happen, and what would the time frame be?
Mm-hmm.
And you like in this case, you see that society has essentially been obliterated for. We really don't know.
I think
years,
it's not 50 years.
Oh, right, because he had survived.
It's no more than 20 years or 30 years, I would say.
Well, he said he'd been walking for 30 years.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. So, it's been about 30 years since things kind of fell apart.
And
since Eli lost his job at Kmart.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. That really must have just been some kid. Some, like, 19, 18, 20-year-old kid working
at Kmart.
It's
possible. What I'm thinking is that
he's not 100.
No, but he's probably in his... let's see. If he was 20, 30, that'd be 50. He could be in his mid to late 50s, because, you know, it's...
So he was working at Kmart when he was 30.
No, he's working at Kmart in his mid-20s after he got discharged, like you said, because his skill set is too high. So,
but he was blind.
Well, spoiler alert, that's the big twist. He was blinded probably in the war or something.
Spoiler alert, I mean, the movie came out how long ago?
Like a year ago? Maybe not even a year ago.
Really?
Yeah. No. Anyway, it's not really significant. And it also is kind of nonsensical, as Roger Ebert put it in his review, which I just checked when I did a little research about the movie. That's right, I researched it a little. He said there's a lot of WTF moments at the end, and there are. I mean, for one... that they're able to make the book look so nice. It's one thing to be able to get the printing press running again and have nice clean sheets of printed book, but it's another thing to like get it bound and like finely and everything. That just seems a bit...
Not if you have the people with the skill sets.
Yeah, but that just seems a bit much for a handful of people and on the rock. The rock. So I don't know. There was definitely a handful of WTF moments. I'm trying to think of if you ever got any sense that he was blind in the actual movie, or up till then.
Well, you're talking about what the fuck, but...
He mentions being able to smell things, like, early on, it's like that he can smell the raiders, and so, and, you know, listening to things is important to him, you know, he likes his little earbuds so he can listen to his music. When he's trying to just sort of get away from everything.
It does one hell of a battery.
Yeah, he got that battery fixed by Tom Waits. You put a trickle charge on it. I like that scene. I like that scene where him and Tom Waits kind of worked out like the barter, you know? And that was nice. I don't know. I mean, ultimately, it's sort of does that villain viewed through the sort of post-anti-hero lens, but it doesn't do it as well as I would have liked. I mean, Gary Oldman is pretty much just a bad guy in this. There's no real, like, oh, you can see he's doing it for his people. Early on, when Gary Oldman's introduced, they try to make it seem like they show him using the shampoo on his, you know, his woman or whatever, and it's like clear that to him that's nice, like that he feels glad that he can he can help her, and it's like a tender moment almost. It's just sort of in there when you first are being introduced to Gary Oldman that makes you think that there's some kind of complexity to him later on when he's being cruel, but then it just sort of seems like, no, he's just really kind of a cruel guy and power hungry and obsessed. You don't get a sense that he's sort of like one of those the ends justify the means kind of guys, because his means never his ends never really seem fleshed out in any sort of real sense, like that he's got, he says some things, but you never see him really do anything that shows that maybe he is kind of a magnanimous leader of these people or really anything. He's just kind of like a leader of a gang of bad thugs.
Well, that's pretty much what he is.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. That was unfortunate because that's kind of unoriginal. I don't like...
As opposed to
Toe Cutter.
Opposed to Auntie.
Yeah, and Auntie. Well, Auntie actually did... Yeah, Auntie made some sense. You could see she was trying to maintain order and stuff. Right, she was
trying to create...
Auntie
society,
entity.
Society, but the Wanderer...
Yeah.
Or whatever you
want. Well, and she had to deal with the embargo from Master Blaster. See, that was the big thing. Is that she, in order to maintain her society, it was basically a power struggle. I mean, it was a pretty complex thing going on.
There were politics.
Yeah.
Which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
They didn't really delve into that at all.
They did just enough that you understood it, though.
Like, no, I mean in this movie.
Oh, yeah, in this movie they didn't, and that's unfortunate. Like, it's like post-Mad Max and all of these other films, you're going to want something... else, something
it would have been
richer.
Interesting if there were two,
like another two antagonist. Power, yes, right. I agree. I fully agree that there would have been, like, if the Malcolm McDowell thing, maybe if there had been like an issue of an assault, like if he had known about the other group and could see how they could gain power over his people, it would have been a more interesting. It would have been a more interesting dynamic, and that's where I think it's kind of. At fault. Now, maybe you can say the movie's not really about that, but it sort of is in a weak way, and I don't know, the motivations for the character, for the motivation for Oldman's character is simple enough, and everything. The motivation for Denzel's character, for Eli, is, I guess, sort of straightforward, and just it is what it is, but I would have liked more, maybe, backstory for him, or at the very least... a little more character for him.
The movie definitely was a little on the cryptic side.
Yeah. Or just, it didn't have it. And, I mean, I don't know, I haven't seen much of the Hughes Brothers' other material, but this, in terms of, like, the acting and the dialogue and stuff, it was kind of weak in some of those respects. Characters behaved in ways that were a little tonally inconsistent. The Mila Kunis character was kind of all over the place. She didn't really... seemed to fit in the world. Like, she was too naive in some places, but she had been, like, working at that bar and around all of those scuzzy people for so long. And you could argue she was a little protected by Gary Oldman and his crew, but even so, it just, I don't know, her character didn't quite work for me. And then the way they kind of try to transform her later on, I don't know, I didn't buy it. It didn't completely work for me. It was like a forethought or a subplot that didn't need to be there.
Oh, God, I'm thinking I'm feeling a 2.5.
No. I mean, possibly. visually, they really just kind of went with something pretty straightforward. It was kind of just a desaturated orange look that would fit with that world. It gave it kind of a Western feel. You know, it definitely had elements of a Western with the sort of man with no name sort of element.
And certain things, and again, I've given it a lot of slack. There were a lot of things that made no sense to me, like the cooling towers.
Yeah.
Made no sense to me at all.
Yeah.
It's like everything... this whole nuclear power plant is dust. It's nothing except for these two fucking concrete cooling towers, which would most likely be the first to hit the ground.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of just things that are like, huh, and okay, and you go with it because it's mostly attempting to just sort of be an entertaining, you know, post-apocalyptic kind of story. But it does have these kind of messages and these themes about control and power and faith, and that it I don't know, it doesn't really grab them and take ownership over them enough. I mean, it could be a more boring, dramatic, talky movie if it did that, but that might distinguish it a little more and make it a little more memorable. And you could still also do that and still keep it more action-y. Like we suggested about the idea of actually having the dynamic and the struggle between the two different power groups, as opposed to just sort of having him arrive at the other group later on. And then they're all good. You know what I mean? It's like the Gary Oldman group is all mostly, with the exception of the Tom Waits character, is all mostly kind of scuzzy, evil, rapist, murderer types. And then the little group of people on Alcatraz that have inexplicably put themselves all clean and nice and
the head happy. Of his security force.
Yeah, Ray Stevenson, Punisher Warzone, and Rome.
Seemed to have some sense of right and wrong.
He did. I mean, he had his lust over the girl, which, you know, makes sense, I guess. But and he did have a sense of that, but he was also, I don't know, his character they didn't really do enough with either. They had that scene where he stepped in front of her when she was going to get the water just to be kind of like a bully and a jerk for a bit, and then backed away. And that's like a 80s villain character kind of, you know, not 80s like action movie, but like Karate Kid kind of thing. Like that's like something the jerk
why didn't he Karate shoot, Kid would do. Denzel Washington.
Yeah, I mean, that's still kind of a who knows why. You know, why didn't, because he was such a bad shot and didn't trust himself, because he missed him a few times, and it was just kind of like, okay. I can just see them sitting there working the script out and thinking about a scene, and I can see Denzel being, so what, I just walk away? And they're like, yeah, you walk away. And he shoots at me? Yeah, he shoots at me. And what happens? He misses. He misses once? It's like, no, he misses a bunch. And these other guys, they miss. Like, one just, like, it hits you, like, it just barely, like, nicks you on the shoulder or something, and it's like, well, that's why I got the power of God or something. It's like, I don't know. Yeah, sure, fine, whatever. We'll do that. We'll pay it off later. We'll explain it later or something. And then it never really does. And then it's like, direction to Ray Stevenson. It's like, be somewhat in awe and let it go. But then go chasing after him again later. Like,
well, it's essentially, I mean, they pay it off. I mean, he's on a mission from God. I mean, that much is obvious.
Yeah. But if the Stevenson, if they'd alluded to the Stevenson character maybe having some history with faith, and if they had maybe had him turn, I expected at that scene at the house when everything kind of came crumbling down at the end, I expected him to turn on Gary Oldman at that point. I thought this will be when he might turn, because they've alluded that maybe he's got a little more of a brain and that he's trying to be a decent guy. Yeah, and then when he didn't, I just thought, okay, fine. And then the way they dispatched him seemed sort of unremarkable. It just seems like it hints at certain things and never really takes very many of them. And
yeah, I'll give you that.
And so I don't know, that's just like, it's hard, you can't give a particularly glowing review to anything that does that. It's not inept in what it does, and I think one thing we should give them real credit for is, I mean, David Fincher did this quite a few years ago with Panic Room, but they're really making use of this digital camera movements and stuff in this movie, where they have a camera go through an exploded car bottom all the way out, and then around into a hole in a building, and then through again. And I don't really like it necessarily. It kind of draws attention to itself and can take you out of the movie. But when it's employed in some cases, it works to kind of capture the action.
I was thinking about this the other night when I was watching Cape Fear. And when, what the hell is it, Katie, Bobby De Niro's character.
Mm-hmm.
When he gets out of prison, there's this great scene where he's walking towards the camera.
Yeah.
But it stops, like, right
after. Yeah, he walks right up to the camera. That's a Scorsese thing.
I was thinking how much cooler would it have been if he'd walked through it, but I don't think they could have done that in 91.
No, I mean,
Or it would have looked really cheeseball. But that would have been cool. I would have changed that. Maybe. I don't usually think about things directorial or camera things of that nature, but that was one thing that did stick in my mind. But you were aware
of what I'm talking about in this movie,
no,
right?
No, like, a lot of times it doesn't work. In fact, I thought the scene where the car blew up was pre-cheeseball.
Yeah.
And that's the one problem I have with digital effects, is even now, and it makes me wonder if you threw a lot more money, would it be better?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times it still doesn't work for me. Yeah. And I miss practical effects.
Definitely.
Because they are just so much juicier in so many ways.
Well, I think in terms of the blowing up car, I think that that was a practical effect. I think they blew up cars.
A car. I mean, you can tell when you blow up a building, you blow up a car, whatever. It's still, you can tell the difference between the digital effect.
Yeah, the big thing is the digital blood, like in the fight scenes and stuff when he's cutting people's arms off and things. That was definitely... That always sort of shows, and that's like sort of like the new Rambo movie kind of has that, or the, I call it the new Rambo movie. It's almost 2 or 3 years old at this point, but Rambo 4 has some of that, and it's less visceral. It's more, we talked about this with the Harry Brown review, which just it just doesn't work yet, and it really, unless the movie is CG heavy, like I think in Lord of the Rings or something where there's so much CG, but they did such a sort of craftsman like approach to using it.
And they also use models.
And they use models. Yeah, they used all their tools, so it kind of all blends into one, like, tapestry of effects.
There were many things in it that were CG that didn't work. I'm trying to think of one.
No.
I'm sure there were.
No, but that's what I'm saying, is that in Lord of the Rings, all of the stuff seemed to work. And in these other movies, it just... I think it's more when they use it as a cheat and as a go-around, as a cheap way to do, like you say, to do what would be done... In the 80s or the 90s with practical effects, with, you know, with squibs and stuff, you know, so it's like it's a realistic movie.
There was still a fair amount of that in Lord of the Rings. Well, probably not squibs so much, but I mean, you gotta look who you're dealing with. You're looking at Mr. Hardcore zombie movie.
Yeah, Peter Jackson.
I'm sure that he didn't throw all that away.
No.
And he used a lot of like, for instance, with the shit.
Well, they used the forced perspective stuff with the hobbits and everything. They used
a lot of
old
tricks,
optical
a lot of tricks
and things,
but
yeah.
What was I thinking of? The Uruguay or whatever? The big...
The Uruk-hai?
Yeah. You know, they actually did... I mean, there was so much fucking makeup.
Yeah.
As opposed to...
Just doing them all CG.
Them all CG, which is what they would do now. And it would not look right. But they were gross enough because of the makeup. And, you know, you go back to, like, somebody like Stan Winston. What was I watching that made me think of him? Oh, Predator. Watched Predator the other day. And the Predator still holds up, but they got that new one coming out, and I'm kind of wondering.
It might be good.
You know, you're looking at a movie, I don't know what its budget was, but...
87.
The guy made shit that looked real. I mean, that Predator did not look fake at all. To me.
Yeah, you know, the key is the wetness of skin and textures. I mean, that's still the thing...
With the laughing at the end?
That's still the thing with CG that doesn't quite seem to work a lot of cases. Is you're not bouncing light off real objects and capturing it with a camera.
The little things that's, you know, just stupid little mistakes that you could almost see somebody doing. Like at the end when his timer starts going off...
Mm-hmm.
And you can't tell what it's saying because it's in some alien language.
Yeah, or it's, but you can. You almost
expected some, you know, B movie that would start counting down Arabic numerals.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, the simple little things. And there was a lot of blood in that. And it was, you know, again, all old school, but it looked real. For the most part, and I mean, some of it was just really gory, actually, with the skin people and the guts and everything.
Yeah, Predator was definitely a one. I'm trying to think if Eli was a... It might have just been a hard PG-13. I mean, I know What's-Her-Name dropped the F-bomb once, and that might have been it.
That's true, there wasn't any nudity.
There was no nudity, and the violence was kept kind of at a... acceptable level of in the dark and on the side. I mean, I don't. It probably was an R though, because that guy, he did cut that guy's arm off or hand off, and that was kind of gruesome.
They
for
did
a
show
second
like that in Lord of the Rings. That was PG-13.
Maybe you're true. Maybe you're right.
You can push.
Yeah, the violence. That's the thing that they always bitch about, right? It's like violence is okay, but heaven forbid you show a mother breastfeed her child or something stupid thing like that, right?
Well, it is so ridiculous.
It's the puritanical culture, right?
It's ridiculous. And, you know, somebody saying cunt, you know, is going to immediately be a hard R. where you cut, you know, 20 people to bits, and that's not in the same level. I mean, it's ridiculous. I could certainly understand the frustration. Well, generally, I feel the frustration of filmmakers that have to put up with this bullshit, and they have to add it.
Well, because it's all about how do you market stuff, too. I have heard good news, though, about the Expendables not even trying to worry about PG-13, which makes me very happy. That's like, you know what? We're not, no, we're not going to try for a PG-13.
Because
that's just stupid.
For that kind of movie, with certain kind of movies, it...
Yeah, I really, usually I don't get too bent out of shape about it. I'm like, well, no, you can still tell a good story.
It's like every time they would take something and... Like, RoboCop 3 was PG-13.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's see.
RoboCop 3 was just plain terrible, though, too.
Really terrible. What was another example? Like, Die Hard 4 was PG-13.
Yeah, I saw when the R version. They start doing
shit like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, what the fuck
are I you saw thinking? The R version of Die Hard 4, and it really... I mean, I couldn't tell you what... I mean, there was a few more F-bombs, maybe, or something. It didn't seem like it was that big a deal. I mean... There's a lot of lot into the argument about the PG-13 R thing and the way that ratings have been changed and the way that people, the culture of ratings has been changed to what will get you an R versus a PG-13. Oh yeah, these
you can push the envelope a lot farther than you used to.
So, I mean, I don't know. It kind of works both ways, but you mean in the end, it's still about a story, but it's about when that story, that type of story, is artificially holding itself back because. It wants to be more appealing. And then it's like, what do you mean? You want to be more family-friendly for dads that don't have the balls to take their kids to an R movie? And, you know, my dad took me to see Rambo 3 when I was a kid. It's no big deal. You know, it's like, now what, all the dads are, like, thumping their Bibles and being like, we're promise keepers.
We're
going to take our kids to see Die Hard 4. Those
aren't the dads that worry me so much as the dads that just aren't there.
Yeah, that's true. Well, maybe it's the generation of boys that are raised by women that are only going to take them to see things if they're, you know. And then it's like, it's still all of the other terrible stuff of a hard R movie, but without the violence, so it's like there's no consequence to the guy being the way he is. You know, you don't get to see, like, a shocking moment of, oh my gosh, this is what happens when someone gets shot in the head, you know? Instead, it's like, it's definitely a worse message when you PG-13-ify a story that is an R story. And it makes for a crappier movie. I mean, like, think of the first Alien versus Predator movie. Was PG-13. I mean, it was a pretty shitty story, but it was the fact that they cut away from all the violence and they really, like, people wanted to see aliens fighting predators. And so you show a little of that, but then you cut away when it gets really gruesome and crazy. That's cheap. And then, you know, then they, like, followed it up with an Alien versus Predator R, which Requiem, and that was so they could reference the R and be like, it's rated R, check it out, rated R. And I mean, then it was still dumb. It was like you missed the message. You missed the point. Making it R isn't what you need to do. Make it a good story.
And that's just it. The PG-13. You think about aliens, and what would you do to make that PG-13? You'd lose a lot of the flavor.
You'd lose a decent bit. But aliens is also an entertaining enough, compelling enough story that it's PG-13. You might be able to take that movie as it was made in 1987 or whatever. And submit it to the MPAA now, and I wonder how much you'd actually have to cut to get a PG-13.
A lot.
I'm not sure it would be that much. I mean, you might have to cut Bishop getting the tail through his chest.
Yeah, probably.
And you might... I mean, really, other than that, in terms of when I think about real visceral violence, it's more, like you said, it's more language and sexuality than it is violence. So in a movie like Aliens...
You can only get away with so much gore. You think violence is okay.
Yeah.
If there isn't a lot of gore. Yeah. Once you get into the gore, like body parts and shit like that.
But there isn't a huge amount of gore in Aliens. Like I said, I cited
some pretty gross
example. And, well, there's the queen laying the eggs, which is pretty gross.
That is pretty gross. Man.
But that's about it, really. I mean, all the other deaths that happen are the alien-style deaths where it's just like something jumps on them quick in the dark.
It's so strange that you have to... that you got to turn back to see something that looks really spectacular but realistic at the same time. I mean, it's not like you've ever seen one, but it looks plausible. And we've, you know, this is 20-something years later, and they're making shit that doesn't look real at all now. I mean, how ridiculous is that?
Well, I mean, a lot of that comes down to the money, and it comes down to the expertise of treating it like a craft. I mean, we talked about Lord of the Rings, but Lord of the Rings is also famous for having one of the most fully realized, completely CG characters, which was Gollum, you know, Smeagol. I mean, it was based on motion capture from the performance of Andy Serkis, and everyone gets all of that. Right. But, I mean, compared to something like a Jar Jar
Binks.
But
you look at the early Gollum versus...
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that was a tricky one, and they really, they did, it's one of the things that doesn't always look completely real.
Yeah, the hold up is, CG does not, it's just obvious that CG does not hold up to age as well, generally. Some of it does. I think that the Smeagol stuff, for the most part, is still watchable. It doesn't, it's not on the level of the low budget shit, you know, it's not on the level of Sci-Fi Channel original movie, whatever this or that, where it's just, you know, bone eater monster. It's
abominable.
That stuff's a cartoon, you know.
This is a bone eater.
I mean, we're kind of off topic though, but yeah, that's a definitely an interesting discussion. And
they get away with the killing all kinds of people because they turn them into dust.
Yeah,
not a lot of gore.
Not a lot of gore.
It's a jib, is what it is. I want to see the bone eater, like, bone people.
Uh-huh.
You know, just, like, pull skeletons.
Nice.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
By the spine?
I mean, yeah, exactly. What was that? There was some movie, oh, shit, was it? I think it was, like, RoboCop 2, where they did that.
Possibly.
Pulled some guy's spine out.
I could see that. Irvin Kershner.
One of my favorite parts of that movie, it had some moments that were pretty damn funny. But when they're trying to create another RoboCop, and they
try to make RoboCop 2.
When they try to make RoboCop 2, and, like, the one just, they keep, like, committing suicide.
Yeah.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah.
And the old man. Oh,
God. Arr, arr. That guy was good.
I'll go get in a hot tub with some naked women.
That would help him out, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't... Did he make it to the third one?
Make his shares rise? I don't know. I know the third one had a whole angle with the Japanese and stuff. And they brought in...
I love good bad guys.
I do when they're good
they
bad guys.
They had Mila Kunis. They could have had... Kurtwood Smith.
Yeah, they should have had the whole That 70s Show crew there.
They should have. And what would the role of the Cooch Man be?
The Cooch Man could just get, like, bilaterally, like, cut in half by...
By a chainsaw that he's just an innocent bystander.
No, you really make it earn it, you know? Make him, like, rape people.
It'd have to be, like, in the Corey Feldman scene in... I think it was 4, Friday the 13th, part 4.
Sure.
Where not only does he get the machete to the head, but the head, like, keeps sliding down the machete and cutting more and more.
More and more, yes.
More and more.
Slow but
Or, slick. Like, Paris Hilton with the pipe through the head.
Like Bennett and, from Commando, yeah, I could see that.
Bennett from Commando?
Where he had to blow off some steam.
Or, like, the gorilla general or whatever in Predator. Mm-hmm. Where he gets to hang around.
Yeah, stick around.
Oh, is it stick around?
We stick around, because then Predators that stick around, over here.
That was an awesome movie.
Yeah.
did you ever do a podcast on Predator?
Yeah, I think we did a while ago.
I think
ago.
You did with
Zach. Zach and Seth and I did, I think. I think I sat him down and said, let's watch Predator and let's talk about Predator. I just occasionally get in a mood and I'm like, I gotta watch a certain movie, and Predator is one of them.
You did an Aliens too, didn't you?
No, I haven't, because I keep waiting for the Blu-ray for Aliens to come out. And then I know Matt.
I know
Matt
you
wants
had the one
it.
With the. You finally got. Didn't you get the one with the surround sound or the 5.1?
The Aliens.
Sound? Yeah.
I think I don't know. I have an old my copy of Aliens is old. I'm not going to rebuy a copy just for audio, especially because I know it'll be out on Blu-ray at some point soon.
It's not.
No, it's not. But which means they'll do a good job of it when they do. That's almost better. I mean,
I would want to see that.
I got The Fifth Element on Blu-ray, and that's notorious for the first time they like did a quick release of it, and the transfer was terrible, and everyone was like, "Oh my god, this is awful," and they pretty much like got rid of them as quick as they could. So then there's a remastered Blu-ray version, which looks good. That's what I have. But I mean, you have to be leery with Blu-rays. You know, you have to like go and read
the reviews. It's kind of like the 3D
to see how that. Well, it's with Blu-rays, it's just simple. It's just, did they do a good transfer? Are you going to get an improved quality on top of
the
DVD?
Well, that's kind of how I feel about 3D now. It's like, well, did they do a good job? And, well, until they start coming out with everything that's actually filmed in 3D.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and usually, I would say
that's probably not that great. And I'll talk about this later.
Okay, well, we'll move on to our trailers and what we watched here. Let's finish up Book of Eli.
You didn't
want
us to watch the trailers. You kept like,
we watched
snapping
some of them.
Through.
I think
was snapping
we'll,
away.
We'll get to it. But okay, so yeah, I would give...
2.5.
No, I think I'll give it a 3-4. It's... I really dig the post-apocalyptic movies, and it had some
it's
fun moments.
While.
And it's been a while. So I'm being...
I think, when was the last big post-apocalyptic movie? Was it, like, The Postman?
Well, or? The Road was a good one, but it was a different kind of movie. And,
I'll have to check it out. I want to see that gangster movie that he did, where he was, like, a European...
Eastern Promises. Yeah, Russian.
I should see that.
That's a David Cronenberg movie. It's
and
good.
I dig Viggo, even when he was Wheelchair Man, when he was, what the hell is his name, Paco, Taco?
From what?
From Carlito's Way, where he tries to sell him out.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I got no legs, I can't even hump.
Yeah,
it was pretty
sad.
And Carlito takes pity because he's going to blow his brains out, but he's like,
it's more punishment just to let you stay alive.
Yeah, I can't remember his name though.
No, so yeah, I'll give it a 3. What do you think? Give it for Book of Eli.
I'll give it a 3.
Book of Eli gets gets 2 3s from us. I think we're both probably being a little generous. It was kind of fun.
There were definitely...
There were slow moments, and Denzel was kind of phoning it in, but he was all right in some places. I think just his presence and Gary Oldman's presence elevated the material, though what they had to work with...
You just tell me what I can talk.
...wasn't that great. You have the floor now, Mark.
I don't got anything.
Oh, no.
It's gone.
Honestly, you don't.
And you are what you eat.
Exactly. So, welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight it's Ian. How
people
Ian?
Must eat a lot of shit, because there's a lot of shitheads out there.
That's good. I like how you interrupted me to say that, though.
It had to be done.
Okay, let's try it again. Take 2. Welcome.
You need to get one of those.
Let's try again.
You need to get a snapboard.
A snapboard, yeah. Okay.
That was pretty close.
Take a... You'll use hands sometimes.
Can we do like 50?
Take 57.
We'll just fast
take 18. Welcome to the Futa. Light falls over in the background. Everyone's like, God damn it.